Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And a good morning to you. Welcome to the Pomp and Joe Show. I am not Pomp. I'm also not Joe. I'm Jason Mackey. I'll be hosting for the next 4 hours. Looking forward to this. Thank you very much to Austin Bechtold behind the glass.
Great to be with you, Jason.
Great to be with you, sir. Brentwood and Baldwin in the same room. Cats and dogs living together. Mass hysteria.
My oh my.
Ah, it's going to be good, though. I'm charged. Energized, something like that, by a debate that Austin and I just had in the conference room across the way, the Ron Cook Memorial Conference Room, by the way, where Ron used to sit and write his columns. I have adopted that, but we got into it. Ron, great to hear you. But yeah, we were debating some Pirates, and we're actually going to talk about that a little bit, but that's not going to be the main topic of the show. Of course, going to get into a lot of Steelers. Cam Scataboo, we're going to dedicate a whole hour to the future Steelers running back, I'm sure. Love that. Have some college football to talk about at noon. So much to get to today. Appreciate you finding us. Appreciate the opportunity to be here and talk a little sports with you off the top, presented by JP Roofing and Siding. Here's a rundown of what is happening on today's show. Got to that a little bit earlier, but yeah, big college football. Going to have Ray Fittipaldo in at 11 o'clock to talk a little Steelers. Max Ralph from the Harrisburg Patriot News at 12:30, talking some Penn State. Jeff Hathorn at 1:35, talking Steelers. A lot of Steelers storylines. Going to have your calls as well. Talking some Pirates, believe it or not. And Austin and I were talking about this show, planning what we wanted to talk about. Austin said something about, it's January. There's nothing really going on with the Pirates, which is absolutely true. And then my brain started going last night, and I want to talk about the Pirates in a realistic sense. And Austin will disagree with me, and that's okay. And you might disagree with me, and you can call me and tell me how stupid I am. But we'll get to that in a little bit. Steelers-wise, I'm not in a great place with this matchup or where the Steelers are at right now, quite honestly. They have a lot to prove to me on Saturday night against the Bengals. Their pass defense, their defense in general, where the Bengals are at, it's not great. It's not great at all. I still think they can go to Houston and win a playoff game, but I'd like to see a lot more on the back end, number one, and it's going to be a tough test with T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase. Joe Burrow playing the way he is, the Bengals with a sniff of an opportunity to get into the playoffs. I wish I felt better about this. I wish I felt better about their offense's ability to score with the Bengals, but I don't. Austin, is this, I don't know, fear? Am I over-worrying about this game? Where are you at?
Well, I don't really think there's that much fear that you can overreact to, because you're going up against a guy that potentially could win the MVP, at least if his team was in prime position for a playoff spot. I feel okay about it. But Jason, I feel like the last month has taught me that you can't completely overreact to anything, but at the same time, you can't completely be paralyzed by analysis of it too. And I feel like the communication issues on this defense, there are so many question marks that I point to where there's more questions than answers.
Yeah, I mean, the communication issue should not be happening. And that's something that Sean Elliott said after the last game. He's absolutely right. And I worry about what happened to this defense. I don't think it's totally, oh, they played the Eagles, they played the Ravens, they played the Chiefs. Yeah, those are good teams. They're going to score points. I look at sort of the self-inflicted wounds, the poor communication. Like, if you just get beat by Travis Kelce, Xavier Worthy, Zay Flowers, Saquon Barkley, I don't know, I'm just making up opposing players over the past couple of weeks. That's one thing. They're not. I'm watching Xavier Worthy go in the backfield, and then the Steelers failed to cover him. I'm watching them leave tight ends all alone in the end zone. That has nothing to do with your competition. That has everything to do with what's going on internally. Now, do we on the outside know exactly what's going on? Of course not. I thought it was funny that Sean Elliott kind of walked back his comments. Not walked back his comments. That's the phrasing it the wrong way. Basically saying he shouldn't have said anything publicly. Which I don't know. I'm glad he did. I'm glad he was honest as one can be in that sort of setting. I would have loved for the Steelers to name names. That would have been even more entertaining and better for those of us covering the team. But there's some issues here, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with admitting that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with talking about this needs to be better. This can't happen. And that's accountability. If anything, that's a check mark in the Steelers column for improving. I just worry about how much they can do at this point. The Bengals on Saturday, I mean, you can say what you want about their defense. Ironically, I was looking at this before the show. All this talk about the Steelers defense, the Bengals defense, and the Bengals defense has been better over the past 4 or 5 weeks than the Steelers have. We really shouldn't be criticizing Cincinnati for not having a defense because there hasn't been much of a defense or enough of a defense here. And the Bengals are scoring a heck of a lot more points than the Steelers. 30-plus in 5 of their past 8. The Bengals have won 4 in a row since that loss to the Steelers, averaging 32.25 points per game. I don't know if they're going to get into the playoffs. Last I saw was about a 17% chance. Believe they need a win, need the Broncos to lose, the Dolphins to lose. It's a lot. And there's a debate that Austin and I will get to. I want to press Austin on this about, does Joe Burrow have an MVP chance? Is that crazy to think about? And I disagree with the idea that he should be MVP. But Pomp and I got into this the other day. Austin, you were off. I have a problem, a philosophical problem with having somebody become the most valuable player if your team doesn't get to the playoffs. What about you?
I do too, and I think it's a different circumstance. Like sometimes that's criticized with Mike Trout in baseball. Like Trout has won MVP after MVP after MVP, and his team doesn't even get to the playoffs. I think it's a completely different sport when it's just 162 and everything that goes into baseball. But Joe Burrow has had an absolutely incredible year. But quarterback is the most impactful position in all sports. And the impact that he's had has not been able to push them over the top and overcome some of the things defensively. It is a disqualifier for me that if your team is not even in the playoffs, and I don't think that they're going to get in, whether it be a Steeler win or they don't get the help that they need. No, Joe Burrow should not be somebody who finishes in the top two.
Yeah, and Joe Burrow talked about this a couple days ago, I believe, sort of acknowledging that he shouldn't be there or probably isn't going to be there, I think is a better way to put it. It doesn't mean he's not playing lights out. Pardon the double negative. He's the only quarterback in the league with 40-plus touchdowns this season. Leads the league in passing yards. Saturday had 412 and 3 touchdowns. He's just been remarkable. If he had a defense, this team would be highly dangerous. But it worries me, again, relative to the Steelers and what they have, the communication issues on the back end, not to mention this hasn't been the best season for Joey Porter Jr. We know that. Dante Jackson started off really strong. I'm not sure what it's been lately. Are you a subscriber to PFF?
No.
Austin?
No. I'm not. I follow it, but
yeah.
I don't subscribe.
Well, I just mean like subscriber to the stuff they're putting out there. There are some people that immediately dump all over
it.
There are some people that really adhere to it.
I don't immediately turn off what they say, but I take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, it needed a few grains. Well, I shouldn't say it that way. Dante Jackson's PFF grade last week was 38.5.
Oh, I believe it.
I mean, that's bad. That's really bad. Since week 7, his PFF grade is 37.1. That's 78th out of the 79 corners who have played at least 150 snaps during that span. That's something. That's something. And you talk about your one corner, Joey Porter Jr., having a problem this season with penalties and really a substandard season in general. Injuries. I don't know what role James Pierre is going to play, how much Corey Trice or Cam Sutton are going to play. None of them have really been that impactful. Obviously, a big thing to have Deshaun Elliott back. Minkah Fitzpatrick is, you know, playing in Monroeville, basically. isn't that much of a factor when it comes to defending passes. It's just kind of there. Baffles me that he's in the Pro Bowl. Learned that right before we got on the air. I don't understand that one, but it's an interesting debate nonetheless with Steeler fans and Minkah Fitzpatrick. But I do worry about the Steelers' defense. And again, the implications of this game, it's not that big, right? Steelers are going to the playoffs. They're going somewhere. They're probably going to wind up playing Houston. I think they can beat Houston. I don't think it's the worst matchup they could possibly have. Beyond that, I have very little faith they can win two playoff games. I'm guessing you probably feel the same way. But if you step back and think about this defense and where we're at with this, it shouldn't be the case. It should not be the case that you spend, what, $137.5 million, something like that, the highest paid defense in the NFL, and here we are the last week of the season going into the playoffs and we're talking about defensive concerns? Huh? No, it just should not be the case. Over their last four games, three losses, Steelers have allowed 26 points per game. That Bengals defense that we want to talk about being so poor, 19.25. The Bengals defense has been better than the Steelers defense of late. And yes, I understand it's been somewhat opponent-aided. I also understand that the Steelers are spending more than anybody on their defense, and that should be more productive. That's something I think about. Mike Tomlin, in his last availability, I believe it was Monday because of the wonky week. It's tough to keep all this stuff straight with the NFL schedule. Talked about there being changes. Or maybe this was even after the last game. I don't know what he can change. What's he going to line up TJ Watt at tackle? You are what you are at this point. What I would think about changing if this doesn't work and it blows up in their face is how their roster's constructed. Don't spend so much money on defense. You're going to have to spend it on offense. You've got the highest paid defense. You're not getting any bang for the buck, and you don't have a number two wide receiver. What are we doing here? And again, I mean, maybe we get more clarity with the Bengals game on Saturday night. Maybe they go into the playoffs and find themselves, and all of this is a useless conversation. Entirely possible. In fact, I hope it is. That would be great. But if this goes south, if the Steelers end up having a very Pitt football-like season where it looks really good and then disappears, you're going to have to ask these questions about what we're doing here. You're going to have to ask these questions of, is this efficient spending? I just don't get it. Fan Twitter, it's brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. And the Fan Hotline, it's presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. It's a whole bunch of Steelers questions that have been rattling around in my head, honestly. And you know, starting with the Bengals and the defense. Another one is more big picture in what would constitute success this season for the Steelers in a likely scenario. Like, let's lay it out there and say, I don't know, they lose to the Bengals. It really doesn't matter. They go into the playoffs and they win a game. Like, do we get lulled into a false sense of security believing that's a successful season? And I don't even know how I feel about it. Like, you would snap the playoff drought. You would have 10 or 11 wins. I guess you would have 11 or 12 wins, I should say. Do you feel like they've gotten a lot better? Are they a different team on the field? Have we learned anything that we didn't know before? I don't think so. I mean, maybe in that scenario, you found a keeper with Russell Wilson. I think that's entirely possible. I think you've learned how valuable George Pickens is. I think you've learned you could probably live without Najee Harris. I think they knew that, though. Got some younger guys on the offensive line that have stepped into roles. It hasn't been perfect, but I think there's enough there. You've learned that there's a gigantic hole. Wide receiver two. But I mean, shouldn't we change expectations too? If I would have told you 11 wins in a playoff victory before the season, yeah, you would have signed up for that. You absolutely would have signed up for that. But 10-3 start, given where things are, if I told you, oh, they're going to win one or two more games the rest of the way, probably wouldn't be too happy. It's okay to change expectations. It's okay for a team to show us there's something different. There's absolutely no way to have a perfect read on a team 3 months prior, 4 months prior. Just a personal thing. I hate that sort of prediction model. You get it a lot in baseball. I dealt with this all the time covering the Pirates. You would get these Zips projections. And nothing against the people that do them. There's just a billion mile markers in between A and B that you can't predict. You can't predict. There are going to be 9,000 things that happen. I can't. So anyway, rabbit hole, but how do you think about the Steelers season? Austin, if they win a playoff game, do you feel better? Do you go into the offseason thinking, all right, yeah, drought's over. Let's go get them in 2025.
Feel better compared to when? A couple weeks ago, yeah, beginning of the season.
I know, that's the point. Let's compare it to the beginning of the season.
So I first think that this is a very critical game for them against Cincinnati. I know you thought a little bit otherwise. Yeah. Because if they lose and the Chargers win, I think the Chargers against the Raiders is pretty much a gimme type of game. They drop to the sixth seed and then they go play Baltimore. And my confidence in them going to Baltimore right now and winning a game on a four-game losing streak after what Baltimore just did to them is very low. I don't think that they can do it. And I think that they need I think they need their own confidence boost by beating Cincinnati to be able to go into Houston and beat the Texans, who are, I know, a reeling team. But if you go in on a four-game losing streak, communication issues are still hampering your team, and there is no sense of confidence, because that's a real thing. I mean, they're not robots. There are real-life emotions that go into this. If that's the case, they go into Houston and start flat-footed, then they're going to lose that game. So I think this game's important, but relative to the beginning of the season, how would my opinion change? I would feel good that they won a playoff game, but I would also remember who it was against and why they ended up being there. And what I mean by that is squandering a two-game lead in the division, letting Baltimore stomp all over you, yes, albeit on the road, but you having your destiny sealed and basically just needing to win one game and then the bottom completely falling out. And even if you beat Houston and then go to Kansas City and get blown out by 20 points, I don't think of the season in a fond way. Sure, you make history and you finally win a playoff game for the first time in 7 years. But if that is what our expectations have become, man, we are far from history.
I know. I know. And and also with a midseason, you know, reason to think differently. Like, they teased us. Not only should the expectations be higher based on history, but in the middle of the season, like, okay, we're not as bad as everybody thought we would be. We're not mediocre. We're 10-3. Looks like we have the quarterback of our future. We've got this turnover happy defense. It's doing a lot of great things. And then whoop, past four games. Nope. I don't think that would feel fulfilling. I would not feel great about that season. So you bring up a good point about going to Baltimore, man. And I'm with you. I'm with you. My confidence level about them going into Baltimore right now and winning would be about 0.01%.
Well, I'd give them a chance. They always play Baltimore well, and that's diminished in my mind a little bit because I feel like Lamar has shattered some demons against them.
I know. He found it, man. He found it.
Well, I don't think he played at an MVP level in that matchup against the Steelers.
No, but he didn't turn it over three times. He wasn't.
No.
You know, he's been an Achilles heel for them against
the
Steelers.
It was more so Derrick Henry in the running game that they never had. They've always had a good running game, but against the Steelers, they've never had that battering ram that would deliver the first punch to the Steelers. And that's what Derrick Henry was. So that Lamar did not have to become something, at least in his mind, that he was not. And change the offense around, try to beat the Steelers with the pass. With Derrick Henry dominating the way he did, there's a Batman and Robin there in Baltimore to take down the Steelers they haven't had before.
Yeah, no doubt. And there's an easy way to avoid it, too, at least for the next round. You show up at Acrisure Stadium on Saturday night, you take care of business, you beat a team that you theoretically should be better than, beat a team that should be going home, that has been deficient for larger portions of this season. I mean, the Bengals are a flawed football team. We're sitting here pumping up their offense, but I mean, this is not, there's a reason they're probably not going to make the playoffs. There's a reason the Steelers are going to the playoffs. You need to go take care of business and then figure it out. I think that might be how my mind changes. Strong performance against the Bengals, take care of the Texans in the opening round, and then your divisional round game, I don't care who it's against. Show well. Do something. And at that rate, I'm good with it. I'm good with it. Like, you saw that in this three-game stretch, you're not as good as the Eagles, the Ravens, and the Chiefs. Okay. I can live with that. I can live with that. And I would imagine that if they win these next two games, it will probably be Russell Wilson aided. The defense will probably show some bounce back. There's going to be some positive storylines that sort of come to fruition there. And you could go into the offseason having a better feel for what you have, what you need to do, that sort of thing. We'll be in and out of Steelers all day today. Can't help but talk about them. I do want to talk about some other things, though. I'm curious where the Penguins go from here. It's a little bit out from any time Kyle Dubas needs to make a decision, but nonetheless, they're kind of up and down, more up than down. They did lose on New Year's Eve, but they head down to Florida, a couple tough games there. What do you do? What do you do? Do you make some tough trades? You try to ride this out? You try to win a playoff round? Give Sid, Gino, and Chris Letang a chance? It's not the way I'd go. I'll talk about that a little bit later. Have something I want to kick around with Austin, too. The craziest sports moment in Pittsburgh this past year. We've had a lot. First one that came to mind, and this isn't necessarily my winner, but just something to stew on over the next hour if you're listening at work. What's the craziest thing that you saw? I mean, Rowdy Tellez was denied a $250,000 bonus, four plate appearances shy of when that would be triggered. Not sure I'd ever see that. There's quite a few. What's one more you would add to the pile, Austin?
The Yager bobbleheads being stolen in the middle of the season? And then the Penguins making like a promotional video basically saying that Yager was on the case to find the bobbleheads. And it made me think, like, wait a minute, did the Penguins intentionally not have the bobbleheads sent there and have Yager try to find them for this whole promotional social media shoot? And then to come to find out that wasn't the case, they were actually stolen.
It's so good. It's so good. The Penguins crushed that. I love that whole situation. So you've got the Yager bobbleheads. You've got the Rowdy Tellez being denied a performance bonus. You can lump Isaiah Kiner-Falefa in there as well. I want to hear from you, too. Probably top of the hour, something like that. I want to get into some Pirates talk next and tell you about my rant and my thoughts, and we're going to take an objective look at the Pirates. But think about the weirdest moment in Pittsburgh sports in this past year. There's been a few. Welcome back to the Pomp and Joe Show. Jason Mackey in for the guys. Austin Bechtold behind the glass. Great opening segment there, talking a lot of Steelers. Going to switch gears and talk a little Pirates here and something I've been thinking about recently. First, though, the fan text line is brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And our six-pack is brought to you by Bet365. Love it. All right, let's get into some stuff because I have an opinion on the Pirates, and this isn't a defense of them. This is the usual disclaimer that this is trying to deal in reality and trying to meet the team where it is, meet fans that want to see winning baseball where they are, try to, again, bring up things that did happen that can be true. The following exercise will require you to not be upset for a few minutes. Just hear me out. And again, I'm not saying anybody shouldn't be upset. I'm not saying they haven't done things to irritate people, and there's certainly reason to doubt. But we move on. Last season, they were 56-54 through 100 games. I would argue that's a fairly representative sample size. Gives you a pretty good snapshot of what they have. This season, they will return every player, every significant player from that team. Let's say it that way. Meaning they will only lose one player who had a wins above replacement figure, according to Baseball Reference, BWAR, I'll reference it that way, of more than 0.9. That was Luis Ortiz at 3.0, traded obviously for Spencer Horwitz and traded along with two minor league pitchers for Spencer Horwitz. Don't love the trade, not the point. Point is that a lot of those guys who contributed to a team that went 56-54 over 100 games are coming back. They also did not play fundamental baseball well enough. Fair. Their offense was not good enough. Did not consistently produce enough runs. They made changes to that second one, hired a new hitting coach. We'll see. They had a 10-game losing streak that was made up of all kinds of things. Late game decisions, poor performance by the bullpen, mishandling of games, whatever. Ran the gamut. So let's step back and think about that a little bit. You're telling me Paul Skenes is going to be around for the entire season. Okay, Brian Reynolds will be here, O'Neill Cruz will be here, Joey Bart will be here, Mitch Keller and Jared Jones. All with a B-War of 1.8 or above, topped out by Skenes at 5.9. And remember, a full season of Skenes. Also a full season of Jared Jones, theoretically, he was injured. O'Neill Cruz at 2.5 B-War intrigues me. I think that number is low, could be low, compared to what he could do. He's been somewhat of an incomplete product. I'm not making excuses for the ankle, but I don't think he was 100% the entire season. I also think his approach, it's been developing. From time to time, he still gets, you know, left on left would give him some trouble. Breaking stuff would give him some trouble. He'd get over-aggressive. He's got a lot of things to figure out in his swing. That's okay. You bring in a new hitting coach. You theoretically revamp your offensive philosophy. Can the Pirates score more runs than they did last season? I happen to think that they can. We also haven't gotten to a few other parts of the Pirates that I think are relatively intriguing. And again, these are things that I think are not illogical to expect. I'm not saying they're going to go trade for Trey Turner. I'm not saying Shohei Ohtani is going to show up at PNC Park. They're not. The Pirates are what they are, and they're going to make you mad, and you're going to be upset, and you're going to say, I just wish they would spend some money. I just wish they would try to maximize this window. I get it. I get it. It's not absolving any of that. What it is trying to take a sober look at what they have, what they can have, and where this could wind up. Starting with the thesis of 100 games, 56 and 54, a lot of that talent back, the changes we're asking to be made, they're not huge. You're asking guys that you have to produce more. Ke'Bryan Hayes is a big part of it. And I'm not going to pretend to be a doctor. I'm not. His back was a significant factor last season. But if you think back to what Ke'Bryan Hayes was at the end of 2023, he's probably their best offensive player. Those final 2 months had an 874 OPS. Hit 299, 10 homers, 27 extra base hits. Was fantastic. You know what he also was? Healthy. Wasn't a John Nunnally thing. It was health. He didn't have that at all last year. Again, I'm not saying it's any guarantee that his back's going to be better or hold up for the duration of the season. But if it did, I believe they have a pretty good baseball player at third base. Let's keep going. Jack Sawinski in 2023 hit 26 home runs. Jack Sawinski, from being around it, was more wrapped around the axle than any Pirates player when it came to Andy Haynes and what the Pirates were asking their hitters to do. Jack Sawinski is not a hitter that should be thinking all that much at the plate. He was thinking entirely too much at the plate. I'm going to go ahead and hope that Matt Haig, anybody else, can just sort of see what's happening here and say, Jack, here's the ball. Hit it. He's going to strike out. There are going to be flaws. But he might be okay. You've also got Henry Davis, and a lot of people will say that the Pirates overdrafted Henry Davis at 1-1. Yeah, maybe a little bit. It was strategic to spread their bonus pool around. I get that. But he was also a consensus top 10 pick. Regardless of where he was drafted, the entire baseball industry thought that this kid was pretty good. He's not suddenly terrible. He's not always going to stink. Andy Rodriguez has struggled some, has struggled with health. Both of them, I don't think they have an OPS higher than about 610. But what's to say that is permanent? Why couldn't they improve? You're not asking for the world. You're asking for young players with pedigree who have done things, who are thought highly of, to get a little bit better. And the comeback is probably going to be, it's the Pirates. I don't believe in the Pirates. They haven't developed enough talent, whatever. And I'm not saying anything other. Feel however you want. If you don't believe in that, fine. There's certainly evidence that they haven't done a good enough job developing people. They haven't. That's a fair criticism. My point is that it wasn't terrible last season, and it may not be terrible again. They may actually be reasonably competitive. Here's another one, that if you look at numbers, and again, strip emotion out of it, strip baggage out of it, strip the trade out of it. I don't like the trade. I spoke critically of the trade. I've written critically of the trade. I didn't like giving up Luis Ortiz and two top 20 prospect pitchers for Spencer Horwitz. I still don't. But if you look objectively at Spencer Horwitz and you acknowledge to be true baseball stats, listen to this argument. Spencer Horwitz last season had an OPS plus of 125. OPS plus, it's a fancy stat. It's interchangeable basically with WRC plus, where 100 is a league average. So Spencer Horwitz was at 125, which is pretty good. The sample size, 97 games. Again, 97 of 162. I'm going to say that's a fairly representative sample size. Not all the way there, but fairly representative. So Spencer Horwitz at 125. I wonder who else is around that number. Well, Jackson Merrill was at 125. Jose Altuve, 126. Matt Chapman, 125. Trey Turner, 124. Pete Alonso, 123. Those are names you've probably heard of. Alonso is a name that everybody's clamoring for, that the Pirates should go out and sign him. I wouldn't have any problem with it. I'm not off my rocker and I haven't gone insane. I don't think that Spencer Horwitz is a better baseball player than any of those guys. Of course not. That's crazy. But it's also possible to think about Spencer Horwitz and say, man, there might actually be something there. What if there is? What if they do get some offense from that position? All it is, again, it's not a defense. I love Adam Crowley, but he presented that when I came in here talking to him and Pat Bostick about, said I was going to go on a rant about the Pirates and looking objectively at what they have and what their season could look like. And he went on the air, said it was a defense of the Pirates. It's not a defense of the Pirates. I want them to spend money. They have holes. They have stuff they have to fix. Their bullpen needs to get a heck of a lot better. They need to spend some money on at least two setup guys. One of them a left-hander who can pitch leverage innings. They need to figure out what the heck's going on with David Bednar and Colin Holderman. Guys had problems tipping pitches, consistent execution of pitches, a lot of stuff. If you're the Pirates, and especially the way they manage starting pitchers where they don't particularly love letting them go the third time through, unless you're Paul Skeens or Mitch Keller, you've got to have a really good bullpen. You have to have a deep bullpen. They haven't done a good enough job building a bullpen. But that's the most fungible part of a baseball team. You can spend a little bit of money on relievers. Give me two relievers and spend in right field. Right? I mean, I don't expect that to be an endorsement. I don't expect anybody to go run and buy season tickets. I don't expect anybody to feel any differently about the Pirates. And that's your opinion. And my opinion is that the Pirates didn't show enough concern over finishing with 76 wins in back-to-back years, which isn't good enough. And it's behind pace for what they've tried to do. Total full-scale rebuild. Tear it down. They don't have enough talent in the minor leagues, in my opinion. They should have more for where they're at and what they've gone through. My only point is that I feel like the narrative around them or the feeling around them is nothing but pain and anguish right now. And it doesn't have to be. It can be remotely exciting. And Austin very much disagrees with me.
Well, the thing for me, Jason, that concerns me the most of any is I look at shortstop, I look at right field, I still look at first base, and I still see a lot of holes. And I look at a team last year that finished with the same win total as it did the year before, with just about a full year of Paul Skeens, who is the best pitcher in all of baseball in my mind. O'Neill Cruz healthy for a majority of the season. Yes, still nursing his ankle, but he was available. Jared Jones in your starting rotation. Mitch Keller back for another year. And it seemed like there was no dramatic difference for a team that had a more talented roster this past year, but compared to last year, ended up with the same amount of wins. And the fact that the bottom fell out at the very end, there were a lot of decisions that I did not agree with, especially in terms of the bullpen management. Carlos Santana, I would have preferred to be the first baseman. They probably should have moved off of Rowdy when they had the opportunity to. I feel like there were just a lot of things, and they have to own that. They have to own
no
the
doubt.
Slide that they went on after being two games. I went to like 20 games last year. Like I am as bought in as I can get, you know, to this and seeing a change. But I want to see significant additions this offseason, and that not just being the hitting coach. Like, they need two bullpen pieces, as you said. I think Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is better as a Josh Harrison role, coming off the bench, playing multiple different positions as a spark plug. I can't trust in Key Brian Hayes at third base right now, because other than a two-month stretch over the last couple of years, he's not been able to consistently produce offensively. They moved off of Brian De La Cruz because he wasn't good enough. Okay, good. But they haven't replaced him. And as I watch the Cardinals make moves, but more so I watch the Brewers, who traded Devin Williams but got a starting pitcher back in return, and Nestor Cortez made a couple other moves, and I watch Chicago go out and acquire Kyle Tucker, I can't help myself but sit back and say that what's going on this offseason is just flat out not good enough to change my opinion of what they could be this year.
And you're not wrong. And you're not wrong. I'm not saying that opinion is wrong in the least. You want to be mad about it? Totally. I get it.
Well, it's not even mad. I just feel like it's realistic. They haven't changed much from a team that from a year ago finished with 76 wins.
Right.
Which is
a fascinating debate. But
you're depending on a lot of internal improvements from Jack Suwinski, who had a horrible year last year, who I know hit 26 homers the year before that. Like, I am concerned that Henry Davis is going to become like the Tony Sanchez's of the world, or the Mark Appel's of the world, or Spencer Torkelson's of the world, that people are hypothetically saying, what if you trade Henry Davis to the Tigers, give him a fresh start, and Torkelson, you do a number one overall pick for a former number one overall pick, because both guys might just need a change of scenery. So there are reasons to be optimistic. There are, and I want to be optimistic for as big as a Pirates guy I am. But at the same time, until they add to the bullpen and they make a significant piece, two significant pieces that's better than Spencer Horwitz in the batting order, Jason, like I just feel like I'm being a realist in that regard.
And you're absolutely right, Austin. That's the whole point. I mean, you can present the argument that I presented. You can present the argument that you presented. And I think they're both reasonable. I do. I don't think it's wrong to look at what they did objectively and think that, well, if Key Brian Hayes is healthy, he can play baseball. We've seen that he can play baseball. There's nothing stopping him from playing baseball. Jack Suwinski, you know, hit 26 homers. Like I said, there are things there that can happen that are realistic. I also understand people that look at it and say, man, I want to see you sign a real baseball player. I want to see you sign somebody for multiple years. I want to see you trade for somebody that I've heard of. Those people are right. They're right. I'm not saying anything different. The point was to lay out a rational argument for why there could be some hope. You can lay out a rational argument for why this team might be watchable. Expecting O'Neill Cruz to go for 2.5 BWAR or above, that's not crazy to think. A full season of Paul Skenes. Imagine if they do get two relievers. Imagine if they get two relievers. Combine them with the two-time All-Star. Holderman, when good, has been nasty. I've liked Majinski and Nicholas. Dennis Santana was really good. That bullpen would not stink. But again, there's a lot of ifs. I mean, anybody who has doubts about that relative to the Pirates, you are certainly within your right. I'm never going to tell somebody to feel differently about that, because they deserve that sort of reputation until you disprove it.
Well, and I think part of my point is, Jason, like, if they do those things, then I agree with you. Like, I do think that there are a lot of points where you could look at on this team and you say, you know, Brian Reynolds, O'Neill Cruz in the outfield, good things can work there together. Nick Gonzalez, I'm optimistic at second base. Joey Bart was a very good addition. I still wonder, where does Henry Davis play? Where are you playing your former minor league player of the year in Andy Rodriguez? How good's your bullpen going to be after David Bednar just couldn't get outs in the ninth inning last year?
Sure.
And Colin Holderman had a two-month stretch where he also struggled. So if you fix some of those things, then yes, I think they can, but there are a lot of ifs and buts and a lot of open holes that I think need to be filled that make those ifs even larger points of emphasis. So I mean, I do think that they can be right around 500 and potentially make the playoffs, but to make the playoffs, they need to make significantly more additions because Paul Skenes, Jared Jones, Mitch Keller, and Bubba Chandler can take you there. That's just the reality. You win in baseball with starting pitching. You really can. So if you support those guys and help them out with a couple bats and a couple arms in the bullpen so that you don't lose their leads that they attain for you, then I think they can do it.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess I didn't even talk enough. We got to get to a break here. But with you know, Skenes, Jones, Keller, Bubba Chandler, very good chance he's up. Bailey Falter, et cetera. Johan Oviedo, Mike Burrows. Welcome back to the Pomp and Joe Show. We'll get to Ray Fittipaldo of the Post-Gazette here in a few minutes. Something I was asked in a mailbag at postgazette.com. I believe it's online. If not, it'll be up there quickly. Who was the top athlete in Pittsburgh in 2024? And I asked Austin that question during the break. For me, it's a pretty easy answer. But there's some interesting other finalists. It's got to be Paul Skenes, right?
No doubt.
Can't go again. It might be the best story, probably is the best story in Pittsburgh. But the other people on my medal stand, Sidney Crosby and Chris Boswell. I went with Boswell over TJ Watt because he very easily could break the single season record for field goals and has just been absolutely unquestionably the best at his position in the NFL. I would understand the argument for TJ Watt, certainly, and Austin might have trumped all of us with his nomination.
So I have Paul Skenes number one. I mean, it kind of just speaks for itself. You start the All-Star game, you win Rookie of the Year, you finish top three in Cy Young. I mean, speaks for itself, but no other explanations needed. Two, I go with Sid. I think about he continues to break milestones. What, 1,600 points? All the goal. He is now the all-time assist record leader in Pittsburgh. I mean, the list of accomplishments are just, there's too much that I can't even think of them all off the top of my head. So I have Sid two. And three was very difficult for me because I thought about Boswell, I thought about TJ Watt, but I have to go with Olivia Babcock of Pitt Volleyball, winning National Player of the Year, first team All-American, first team All-ACC, only a sophomore. Probably one of, and Joe and I got to meet her and just see how good she is up close in person by when she was serving to us at the very beginning of the year. And she was definitely taking it easy on us because when I watched her, especially in the Final Four, it seemed like the ball was going 95 miles an hour. I've never seen anything like it before. She deserves it. And I know volleyball does not get as much recognition as a lot of the other sports. But if you put everything on an equal platform, what she accomplished there and what she's meant for Pitt and what she's meant for volleyball in this city and even in this country, being from L.A. and deciding to come here to Pitt, and all that represents that she believes in this program, I think she's worthy of being on the stand.
Yeah. I'm going to have to widen the stand because I don't feel great about taking TJ Watt off. I don't feel great about taking Boz off. I mean, I don't know how Sid's not on there at this point. Like, you're surpassing 600 goals, 1,600 points. Mario for the Penguins' career record. 42-goal season last year, had 99 points in 86 games in the calendar year. Like,